We are going to continue in our Advent series where we are called Love is Near, which also the title of the record that Evan and I just recorded for all of you, which I'm so excited. It comes out on Tuesday. I get bugged. I did a Christmas record clear back in 2009 when I worked for John Mark Comer at Solid Rock, and people ask me for that CD every year. I don't have it. I'm not giving it to you, because there's a track that sounds like Maroon 5. And that's I'm maybe the Lord's still making me pay for that. But it wasn't me, though. But really excited. I mean, you know, we wanted to create something that I think captures the spirit of what we are praying over the church, which is, you know, I think that holidays can be so chaotic. It feels a little chaotic in my household. And yet, what we want to be are a people that bring peace to an anxious world. And so I think the record captures that spirit of peacefulness, and do pray that it blesses you. And in the spirit of this concept of love is near, which is what Advent's all about, it's that it's about the gospel. It's about a God who doesn't ask us to climb up to him, but it's a God who comes down and meets us in our brokenness and invites us into a rest that we see the world so desperately needs. And so today, what we've been looking at, we started off by just considering what is the incarnation? What does it actually mean that the Word became flesh? Who is this Jesus? But now we're considering what is that incarnational spirit. Last week, we considered that incarnation is marked by hope. And today, I want to declare to you that incarnation is marked by service. And so we're going to, the passage that's going to anchor us is in Philippians chapter 2. And if we can get that first slide up, it says, "Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself." There is that strange and mysterious theological concept that we call kenosis, the divine emptying. By taking the form, it doesn't just say of a man, but it says by taking the form of what? A servant. Being born in the likeness of men and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Now, when we think about Jesus, the incarnation, that God's entrance into this world, that the Son of God, the eternal Son of God, that he emptied himself of the glory that he had with his Father. Remember in the Upper Room Discourse, he says, "Father, I am ready to have restored to me the glory that I left." That there is a divine emptying. And that tells us something very unique about Jesus. And we talked about this in the message on incarnation, is that Jesus wasn't walking around 2,000 years ago like some kind of Superman. That he never ceased to be God, but he was fully man. And what he came to reveal to us, not only did he come to seek and save that which is lost, but he also came to illustrate for us what the Spirit-filled life looks like. This is why I always say that when people saw Jesus, the hatred even toward Jesus, or even the amazement and the draw to Jesus, was not so much that people were seeing God, but they were seeing man as God intended man to be. What they were seeing was a man who was so surrendered to the will of the Father that the Spirit life through him had complete control over all that he did. That is that, and when I said that he entered into the fallenness of humanity, or I even use the language of sinful flesh, I want to be very clear, and I'm not declaring that which has been declared a heresy, that Jesus was sinful. I'm saying that Jesus entered into the brokenness of human existence without ever collapsing under that brokenness. He was able to take the broken life and actually accomplish what we could not accomplish, which is enter into the frailty of human flesh without ever succumbing to that frailty. This is why we can say that he who knew no sin became sin, that we might become the righteousness of God, is that he actually was able to take sin all the way to hell without being conquered by it. He was able to take the isolation and the separation that sin creates and overcome it. This is why we call him Christus Victor, that Christ is victorious. But what was at the root of his victory? And I would argue that at the root of his victory was his taking on himself not just simply our humanity, but taking on the form of what humans should be, which is servants. That he humbled himself to the point of death, even the death of the cross. And I would argue that the entire life of Jesus has saving significance. In fact, my belief is that every time Jesus even healed someone, because remember what it says when the woman that was bleeding touched him, he said he felt power, what, go out of him. I believe that this is all part of that divine emptying, that every time someone experienced the healing touch of Jesus, he took into himself their brokenness, their hurt, their pain. And it impacted him, and it affected him, and it weighed upon him. But he was able, due to his absolute obedience to the Father's will, that the Spirit was able to sustain him under that weight of human sin and brokenness, which is such a profound thing. This is why people ask me, like, what brought you to faith at 27? And the bottom line is that Jesus, there was something familiar about him, more human than any human I'd ever met, and yet there was something not human about him. And that is, he was man enough that I could relate to him, but he was God enough that I believed he could save me. And I found myself utterly, so people, when anyone asks me, like, why'd you come to faith? Like, it's a Jesus answer before I can say it's a God answer. I just became compelled by Jesus. And the words of E. Stanley Jones, even if men were able to create the person, the historical person of Jesus, if they were able to invent him, then I would have to worship the men who created him, because he's that different, that unique, that worthy of our total surrender. But when we think about service, this is the thing that I want us to say. When we look to Jesus, who is the incarnation, gives us a picture of what the Spirit-filled life looks like. And the Spirit-filled life, we can't go around saying that we are Spirit-filled and Spirit-controlled if our activity is driven by our own desires and our own ambitions. That the joy that comes from being intimately engaged with God is that intimate engagement with God always leads to an other-oriented disposition. In other words, my joy comes from my service to others, and my intimacy with God is directly corresponds to my surrender and my giving away for the good of others. The emptying of myself is actually how I find myself. And so when we talk about what the church should be, I want to just say once again that the only tangible evidence that our relationship with Christ is healthy and vibrant, it is defined by how we live life together. And the key idea that I want you guys to walk away with, and any time I've ever talked about servanthood, I always say this, is that today is a day not to choose to serve, but it is the choice to be a servant. And there's a difference between choosing to serve and choosing to be a servant. Because choosing to serve is still you controlling when you're willing to give up yourself. Choosing to be a servant puts you in a daily position by which we live out that beautiful passage in Romans 12, verse 1. I beg you, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, that you present yourselves as living what? Sacrifices. That this is actually what leads to our logical worship. This is why Jesus said, by this they will know that you are my disciples. By what? Your love for one another. But when Jesus uses the word love, he defines it in that very teaching by doing what? getting on his hands and knees and washing his disciples' feet. And I think that this is the picture of what agape is agape is marked not by, I love you, it is both word and deed. It is an act of, my love for you is that I am willing to be sacrificed for your good. I'm willing to lay down my life for your good. You know that mysterious passage that, a passage that I think gives us insight into servanthood, and I've witnessed it firsthand. You know how it says that women will be saved through childbirth? What does that mean? What does that mean for someone that can't have a baby? Like, is that the point? What's the point? And I think what Paul is actually getting at is that that is a almost enforced self-sacrifice. I mean, just being a parent is I think my wife has felt this more fully than I've felt it, is that she gave up her career, she gave up so much, and her life, that kind of the picture of the crucified life was discovered through just the daily willingness, almost enforced dying to self, by dealing with a very, very, Hattie, we thought we wanted to have 5 kids. And we had Henry, and he was like the easiest child ever in the history of kids. And we're like, we could have 10 of these. And then we had Hattie, and she was a force of nature that literally put gray hair on our heads way earlier. Just the strong will, and there was so much that we had to die to help navigate that little power source toward the incredible and beautiful woman that she is today. A lot of, especially on my wife's side, I think it's one of the reasons it's so challenging to become an empty nester for someone that's like, my whole life has been wrapped up in raising these kids, and now I just have you. And you broke my finger. And I'm like, well, it seems like the cross is still there for you to bear, honey, because I just can't seem to grow up. And I know now you don't feel safe at night when you know that I startle that easily. But I can do damage when I'm scared, clearly. The point is this, is I think that the point that Paul is making is just I think he's speaking to the reality of what happens when people live their lives. They surrender their own physicality, emotions, desires, dreams, aspirations, all for the good of others. And I think that this is a beautiful thing. And you don't have to be a parent to enter into that reality. And so I would argue that it would be, we all actually are saved through dying to self, because isn't that what the crucified life is? Is that we enter into what I refer to as the good death, so that we can come alive in the resurrection life of Jesus, which is found in our going out of focus, so that Jesus and others can come into focus. So let's consider what it means to be a servant, and just in really 3 things really quickly. The first is this, is that the call to service is marked by a call to humility. In fact, before Paul gets into that whole beautiful depiction of the kenosis, the divine emptying that the Son of God went through as creator became creature, is this. Paul says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. He follows this command to the church in Philippi. He follows this command with, here is the illustration. It's the incarnation. We look to Jesus to discover what it looks like. And it says that he humbled himself. And here he says it. The call to service is, we're not called to function according to selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. I had this kind of revelation the other night. I'm working on this on an album that I've been working on for a couple of years, and I was out with a group of non-believer musicians. I was basically meeting with the guy that's producing the album and the engineer whose band was playing. And it gave me this pang, because it was like, that was my life in my 20s, was going to shows, and which now is like, it was like 10 o'clock, and I'm like, whew, I have got to get to bed. but there was this moment where I was in this car, I was getting introduced to all these musicians and producers, like, this Josh, I'm working on his new record, I'm really excited about it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, and all I could think about was like, I want that. I want to be so much pressure being a pastor. I just, like, right now, I just want to be a musician. Like, isn't known by anyone. I just want to play shows and have fun. And then I realized, I'm like, Lord, why am I even here? Why am I even working on this record? And Mel said something to me a while ago. He goes, I believe part of your ministry is that as you are making music, even outside the church, is that it's an opportunity for you to bring more people to a knowledge of Jesus. The selfish side of me was, I don't want to say anything about Jesus because I am here for my own musical career. And the Lord's like, oh, that ship sailed so long ago. What are you, delusional? You're 51. Like, chill out, dude. Like, you're an old man. Nobody's interested. But these opportunities are open up. And the moment I connected it to the gospel, and it was so funny because I'm standing there with this group of people and I'm like, it's been a long time since I've been out. And this guy, like, I've known him for a while, but he didn't know I was a pastor. And he's like, he wanted to show me this building he just bought, like, downtown, and that he's going to be opening up a bookstore. He goes, hey, you want a bump? I'm like, I literally was like kind of racking my brain. I'm like, I know that term. It's been a long time. I'm trying to figure out what this term, I'm like, he's offering me drugs right now. And he asked me for a dollar bill, and I thought he wanted to buy something. I gave it to him. And then he walked away, and then he came back, and it was rolled up. I'm like, oh, no, you just keep that. I don't even want to touch that. And I was like, how am I in this position right now? And then immediately following that, I was like, that's my cue. And I told him I was a pastor and invited him to church. And he was like, shut up. So I thought you were like a book collector and a real estate mogul. I'm like, a real estate mogul? What? I'm like, I've like renovated a couple houses. I don't know. Like, I've never said anything about that. He's like, that's what my friend said, is that you were a real estate guy. I'm like, no, I'm a pastor of a church. And he goes, so you were a musician that looked like Ziggy Stardust, and then you started your own religion? I'm like, no. I think that bump is messing with you right now, because I'm like, and he was all excited, just rubbing his nose. I'm like, no, I'm a Christian of a church. And the guy that you know so much, that's the reason I'm standing here, also goes to this church. And so does that guy that you know. And so does this person. And they're like, you guys all go to the church? And they're like, yeah, we all go to the church. And then all of us were like, you should come. And I realized, like, this is, it's like, my ego, the moment I let go of just, like, that little pang of that desire to be what we once were, what we thought we should have been, it was like the movie This Wonderful Life. Like, it was like this realization, like, no, this is what it's about. This is that God loves this guy. And why is he doing this? I don't know why he's doing that, but I do know that there is a beauty, a life, a high that is not going to be found in any of those things without diminishing returns. No, this is something that can actually transform your life. And it just gave me a vision, like, that's what matters to me, is I just want people to meet Jesus. But sometimes we need to be reminded of that, because the selfish life, the old man, the old woman, has the power to resurrect quickly. And here's the thing. If you want to test that in your own life, is ask yourself this question. Is there a reluctance in you to tell the people that you know that don't know Jesus about Jesus? And if there is, I want to just say it this bluntly. I don't care if you're an introvert. I don't care if you're shy. If there's even shy people will talk about what they love if you get them to talk. Even introverted people still have passions and care deeply about things. if the inclination is, I don't want to tell this person that I'm a Christian because of how it might what? How it might what? Impact you. You just gave yourself the litmus test that you are not living as a servant. And that was the realization for me. I had the choice, and we have that choice every day. I could just keep my mouth shut and just play dumb and just be a pathetic, aging musician, or I can own the beautiful fact that I've had the privilege of leading a vibrant, thriving church, that I am not just a representative of Jesus, but I also represent you, the people of the church. And I like that I can go be with people that are doing things that none of us should be doing and tell them about Jesus and say, we don't need that. That's ridiculous. Because that's what Jesus did. And I'm not telling you to go out and look for people doing drugs. Although in Portland, you're just going to run into them. There's probably someone here right now on mushrooms, who knows? We've gotten joints in our offering boxes throughout the year. So we know that this is the kind of people that we are very, very much called to be a conduit of the love of Christ to. And yet we let the people who are the most broken and the most hurting, we let them just walk by, let them continue on a path that is heartbreaking and painful because of our own little weak, frail egos. Now, I don't want people to think differently of me. I don't want to be known. And man, what a sad thing. Nothing is sadder than to refuse to be a servant of Christ and use the excuse, well, I just don't want to be connected. You know, if people find out I'm a Christian, they're going to immediately think that I'm a part of this political party. Or if I'm, you know, we have to keep in mind how much the church has hurt people. Listen, our loyalty to Jesus cannot be connected to the failings of the church through human history, because the church is made up of broken, fallen people. I don't ever defend my Christianity based upon A+ the church has got through human history. That's not the point. The point is that even in the midst of times where it seemed like the church could potentially be snuffed out from missteps, Jesus has always remained on the throne, and he says the gates of hell shall not prevail against her. I don't care what Christians are known. Like, I'm not going to start off by telling you I'm a Christian, but let me tell you what that doesn't mean. If you're falling into that trapping, then once again, it's still your ego, because you don't want to be associated with those people. But if you're a Christian, you are one of those people. You've already crossed the threshold of reasonable. And it doesn't matter, because the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. And so the position of servanthood is that your vision of God is so great that it shines a spotlight on the hurt and the pain of others in such a way that you cannot be settled with anything but trying to figure out how to be a part of the remedy, how to bring the solution. And I'm not talking about proselytizing. What I'm talking about is being the hands, the feet, and the mouth of Jesus. It's just that, is there something different about your life? Is there something about you? And the thing that encouraged me in that conversation, like, so much is making sense about you now that you're saying that. I'm like, what is meant? That I'm kind, hopefully, that I seem to be concerned with what's happening in his life. That it's a rare thing to come across someone who is so other-oriented that people that feel invisible for much of their life all of a sudden feel seen. Do you bring that to the table? Because this is what Paul commands us. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Now, I think he says do nothing from selfish ambition and conceit because he recognizes that we're going to do a lot that is marked by that. And so we should feel the tension, that this should always feel contrary to what God has called us to. And believe me, I'm not preaching at you something that I'm immune to. I'm sharing with you that the initial response in my mind was say nothing and play the role of, naive musician. And then the Holy Spirit quickly showed me how foolish that was and what an amazing opportunity was right in front of me. And you know what was so cool? Nobody was offended that I was a pastor, not a single person. In fact, all they did was ask me questions. And then I found myself standing there for 45 minutes, long after I wanted to be in bed, sharing with them what my beliefs, he asked me what my beliefs were. He was at, like, what kind of Christian church? Like, what do you believe? Like, what? And I just said, well, the thing I tell the church every week is that on your worst day, Jesus is crazy about you. And he goes, really? That's crazy. And I'm like, dude, I'm not the one that has white in his mustache, okay? And it's not from aging. So, it's just funny. It's like all of a sudden you just see clearly. And it was like, and I was like, he loves you. He loves you. That's what I want you to know. He loves you. That's the servant's heart, I believe, is that it's just that disposition where I'm like, my joy is directly connected to my willingness to fade out that you might fade in. And I think that this is a beautiful thing. Isn't it what Luke, what said in Luke 16:13, no servant can serve two masters, for either will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. Humility is not weakness. It is power under control. And it's power under control in the sense that the Spirit is the one in control. The humility is that it's what I refer to as the real meaning of what it means to be pure of heart. And pure of heart doesn't mean perfection. It just means single-mindedness. I, even in my brokenness, choose to make Jesus the central theme by which my life is defined, by which I enter into activity with others. And I think that the more we actually enter into a position where I just want to love Christ and I want to love others, and if I actually just did those two things, everything else in life would probably fall into its proper place. And it doesn't matter what the days bring, because as long as Jesus is with me, because I also know that the best is yet to come. So I don't need to be, I'm not deterred by the challenges of existence or the pain that comes with living, because we are a people, as I said last week, hope is directly connected to reality. We cannot be a people of hope unless we actually see the reality of how broken the world is. And so this is the outcome. Hope means that we enter into a position. We see life as it is, and our hope is directly connected to understanding that Jesus said, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, as an illustration for what he wants us to be in this world today. And that is the faithfulness that he has called us to until he returns, or until we die. So I would just simply say this. Humility, power under control, is the willingness to turn over to Christ yourself and all you have so that you can be truly a servant, which means when I'm a servant of Jesus Christ, I don't own myself. I don't own the things that I own. Everything is on loan to me by the good master. And how I treat the things that God has given me defines how truly surrendered I am to my King. And it is played out in how I treat people. And I think that this is an important thing for us to understand. I mean, think about it. Love truly cannot exist unless there is surrender on both sides of the relationship. I can't truly love someone if I refuse to surrender my well-being so that they might experience love. And I can't get a guarantee that I will get it back. But if Jesus says that's actually where my joy will be found, we should believe him at his word. And isn't it funny that there's something in us that questions whether or not surrender will really lead to happiness? Because we have been taught since the day we were born in this country to believe that our joy is found by taking the world by the reins and getting out of it what you can, while you can. But how many examples do we need before we realize that that is just simply not true? That's not true. The call to service begins with humility. It's a surrender. But the expression of service is sacrifice. Look what it says in Philippians 2:4. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but to the interests of others. So it's not just actually putting others before yourself, but it's actually serving others. In other words, we are looking for ways to fill in the gaps of where there is lack or what is missing in others. I so appreciate it. Already today, I've had a couple people come to me that know about Darcy's Finger and like, can I make a meal for Darcy, for your family? You know, and I mean, that's just like, man, it's Christmas season. Everyone's busy. I'm totally capable. But just that heart to, I want to serve. I want to put where people are hurting, where they have need. I want to put their needs before mine. And I actually think that people that ask that question, it's because they've already tested it and they've discovered it actually brings far more joy than trying to control what is mine, trying to hold on tenaciously to what is mine. I've had this happen. Christmas is a great example because I am, especially when I'm anxious, I'm a guy who, I'm not going to lie, I just like to shop. It's like, my wife's like, you could go into a store and be in a store longer than anyone I know. And I'm not saying that it's women that shop more than men. I can't say that because I am capable of shopping longer than any of the women in my life. And it's easy right now, Christmas shopping, it's fun. I go out and shop for kids, but where that selfish gene is Darcy will be like, what did you get for the kids? And I'll come in a new outfit. And I'm like, I don't know. It never feels good. And then I end up giving it away because I felt bad. So I'm trying to, it's getting better. Because the older you get, you realize it doesn't matter how you dress it up. You're still a half-dead person. And you can laugh, but, you know, us who have crossed over that threshold past the halfway mark, you know, in the words of a comedian, you know, those of you who are young, if you're in your 20s, you still have 70 years to go through so much heartbreak and pain. I have way less of that than you, and so I can live more freely, freed from the tyranny of self. The expression of servanthood is marked by sacrifice, and you know, where I tasted this the most fully in just very practical ways was when I chose to enter into my father's life knowing that I would get nothing in return other than, and I didn't expect to get anything in return, I actually got more than I could have ever hoped for, which is I got to experience the pleasure of Jesus showing me and giving me the capacity to love my dad, because Jesus showed me only once I was willing to take the inconvenience of flying all the way to Alaska many times to be there for him when he was in the hospital, that Jesus showed me how much he loved my dad and gave me at the same time the capacity to love him because I saw him in a new light. And nothing has brought greater joy to my life than knowing that I entered into my dad's suffering and became a son to him even when he was never willing or able to be a father to me. And I love my dad because I did that. And I was able to work through the brokenness of our relationship because I did that. And I was also able to be a conduit of Jesus's love, which I believe ultimately led to my dad's salvation because of that. What greater gift is that than the regrets of, I refuse to forgive you because you don't deserve my forgiveness. I will not serve someone that only hurt me. And some of you live with that spirit toward people that have hurt you. And I would argue that an unforgiving spirit is one of the key ways that you can test whether or not you're actually living sacrificially. Because Jesus' sacrifice was driven by a willingness to die for people that were acting as his enemy. This is why it says, Christ Jesus, while we were enemies, died for what? Us. So the picture of a sacrificial service is that our life cannot be marked by self-preservation. And I think this even goes to that, to the concept of calling the church to live more radically generous, is our self-preservation, and often it's not even our self-preservation. It's really our, the luxuries that we have. Do I want to give up my daily coffee at X, coffee shop, or do I want to give up my book budget so I can give to the church? No way, I'm not doing that. And we say, I've earned this, I've worked for this, this is mine. And this is the attitude. I've had that attitude, we all do. And this is why as a church, what we have to do is to be freed from that. We have to speak it out and say that it's a reality that is always prevalent. And this is why each day, like Moses speaking to the children of Israel, we have to ask the question, and today, will I choose life or will I choose death? Will I be the person that holds on to the things that I think are mine when in reality, none of it's going to save me and I can't take any of it with me? How awesome would it be if we just lived with an open hand that says, Lord, all that I have is yours, and I want to give my life away so that you can be glorified. And I promise you, there is a greater joy in that kind of radical, costly sacrifice. And we've all tasted it. Anyone has entered into something where you're not going to get anything out of this. You think you're not going to get anything back from this. I'm just going to serve, and it's going to be a thankless job. It's like my dad telling me when I flew all the way to Alaska to sit with him in the hospital, and he says, I'm never going to apologize to you for how I raised you. And you're like, well, fine, I'm going to fly home then. No, instead, I found the joy was Jesus showing me that I could love a man that could say something so hurtful and give me the capacity to see that his speaking that came from his own brokenness, that it actually had nothing to do with me and had everything to do with him. And I didn't need to add to his pain or suffering. In fact, he is going to feel the weight of those statements, not by me being cruel back, but by loving him in return. That's the beauty of what Paul says. And when you sacrifice yourself for your enemy, what happens? It's like pouring coals upon their head. It's coals of love. This is why it's the kindness of God that leads us to repentance. And if Jesus is willing to die for me, and I know what I am apart from Jesus, I remember what life was like apart. If I hadn't met Jesus, I would have been the guy offering the bumps at 50. I've seen it. Nothing more sad than what was sexy at 20 is not sexy at 50, okay? All the rebellion and the rock and roll and the drugs and the freedom, I promise you stay on that path. The toll that it will take on your body, your mental health, your relationships has such diminishing returns that any joy that you might have had there. But however, a person that lives sacrificially, that lays down their life for the good of others and maybe even goes unnoticed throughout their lifetime will receive things that bring more satisfaction and more treasure. And I think that we are all happier probably when our life is marked by the joy we brought others rather than the attention that we got ourselves. The greatest saints in heaven will not be the ones that we know by name. I promise you that. And I think that this is the call to a sacrificial life. And this is why we have to understand that, you know, they say, no cross, no crown. I would argue it's much deeper than that. It's no cross, no Christ. If we want Jesus, then we must accept the way of Jesus. And the way of Jesus isn't marked by this or that thing that we do. The way of Jesus is marked by this. Pick up your cross and follow me. And to pick up our cross and follow him, the place he's going to lead you is into the lives of hurting people, not away from them. So, the expression of service is sacrifice. The call to service is humility. But the outcome of service is unity. Look what it says in Philippians 2:2. Complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. If we all put those around us ahead of ourselves, everyone's lives would be met. Isn't that like the truest thing in counseling? If we would, when you have couples in conflict, if each person, instead of holding on to the ways that they are wounded or hurt by the other, if they said, I will make this person's needs my priority, if both people did that, both people's needs would be what? Met. Now, that's not the way that life works, and we can't actually serve people because we need our needs to be met. I promise you, though, when you enter into this position where I choose to be a servant rather than choosing when it suits me to serve, that your needs will be met. And you will find yourself probably far more emotionally and spiritually stable than those that are in a position of continual self-preservation. And so I think that what Paul is saying is that our willingness to be servants is the key to our unity as a church, and our unity as a church is the key to our witness to a lost world. Because our unity should be the thing that proclaims to the world that all of this pursuit of our own happiness is not the when the world can look at the church and see a unity and a love and a self-surrender, it's like we are actually living beyond the ideals. Because here's the thing, we turn to governments and politics and ideologies to achieve what can't be achieved. You're not going to achieve utopia on this side of eternity. But what we can in the church achieve is that we can be a kingdom outpost, at least give a glimpse to the world, a small glimpse into what is coming in full in the future. Because all that the world is trying to accomplish is the thing that only Jesus can bring to the world, except the world is trying to do it without Jesus, and it just doesn't work. This is why we're not going to have utopia because of capitalism. We're clearly not going to have utopia because of socialism. We are going to have the only utopia that can exist is by the blood of the Lamb. And that redemption awaits us, and Jesus leaves us in a war zone because he wants us to bring that peace to a broken and hurting world, to say that there is a future, but that future begins and it ends with Jesus. And we become the servants of Christ when we are willing to pick up our cross and follow him, and it should following him should lead to a deeper unity as a church. And so I just asked today, do you feel connected here? Do you know, are you known by name? Because I want to just say this. You are not a part of the church if your idea of being in church is just simply coming and sitting and listening to me talk. And I talk way too long. Chuck shames me every time he preaches, and I hate it because I already looked at the clock today, and it's bad. But here's the thing. It's okay. This is the position I've been called to, and you put up with my rabbit trail. So that's on you. It's not on me. here's what I'm really saying is that if you're a person that comes in week after week and you just, nobody's going to approach you if you have a wall up around yourself. Because haven't you ever come around across a person and you're like, yeah, that person just does not want to be talked to. I'm going to say to those of you who are known and know, don't let someone's wall stop you from pushing in. So if you're sitting here and you're that person, I am calling the rest of you, church, to make that person, you're going to break down that wall. If they're willing to come in here, then they have to accept being loved and being cared for. Like, we're going to bear hug you, and that's why I'm calling the church starting today to greet everyone with a brotherly or sisterly kiss. So, like, absolutely not. I agree. I think that is a horrible idea. I've been to countries where they do it, and I just, like, I immediately just, like, stop that. What? Don't do that. It's a funny thing. However, there are many ways that we can show people that we love and that we care. And I want people to experience the unity of this community where I need to be a part of that. And the only reason they'll want to be a part of it is because they are seeing the servant's heart being played out in real time. Incarnational living means that we have humbled ourselves, we have entered into a daily desire to sacrifice what is best for me so that I can make sure that what is best for you is actually occurring. And it should lead to a unity of body that actually brings a witness to our city. This is what it's all about, guys. This is all I want to leave you with. This is our reasonable service. This is our logical worship. And this is what Advent is all about, is actually declaring to the world that our God is a God who entered into the world not to be served, but to serve. as a picture of where our real joy is found, is that he did not create us to be self-focused. He created us to be other-oriented, that we might actually truly discover who we are meant to be all along. We will continue to be an enigma to ourselves as long as we put ourselves first. So don't choose today to serve. Choose to be a servant. Amen? Let's pray.